Hey friends, welcome back to the show. I'm Dr. Nick, this is Dr. Tracy, and we have a really special episode for you today. We sit down with a holistic cardiologist. His name is Dr. Jack Wolfson, and we talk about all things heart health.
This is the first installment of a three-part series, and in this first episode, we're going to be talking about food, chemicals, and really busting some myths that we've been told about heart health. So it's going to be a great one.
Yeah, I think you're really going to enjoy this episode with Dr. Jack Wolfson. Well, Doc, great to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for spending some time with Dr. Tracy and I. Hey, tell me a little bit about your story and how you became a holistic or natural cardiologist. You know, why did you decide to practice this way?
Well, you know, the story really starts with me being born into a conventional medical family. My father was a cardiologist. There were other medical doctors that were in my family, and that's pretty much all I grew up, you know, around. So my entire life, I wanted to be a cardiologist, just like my father. So I went through 10 years of medical training and four years of medical school, 3 years of internal medicine residency, 3 years of cardiology fellowship. I was the chief fellow of my class. And this was all done in Chicago. But like many Chicagoans, we love getting out of Chicago to go vacation in warm places. And you guys get that being based out of Indianapolis.
They all come to Indianapolis, Doc.
I was to say again?
I said they all just come to Indianapolis to vacation.
Oh, yeah, sure, right. Indianapolis, wonderful place. I'm not here to trash the Midwest, believe me. But, you know, so when I finished up all my training, I decided ultimately to move out to Arizona. So I'm out in Arizona for a couple of years, and I'm in practice. I'm with the biggest cardiology group in the state of Arizona. I would eventually become one of the senior partners in that group. And again, hospital-based cardiologist, the sickest of the sick patients, seeing just, you know, 50, 60, 70 patients in a day, whether it's in the office or in the hospitals, angiograms, pacemakers, heart attacks, strokes, the whole gamut. Well, it just so happened, and it's kind of a long story in and of itself, but I get fixed up on a blind date with a doctor of chiropractic. And we started having a nice conversation about how worthless modern medicine is and how I need to change my practice and practice philosophy to a holistic one. I need to become a DC, not doctor of chiropractic, but a DC doctor of cause. And what she had to say on that first date really made a lot of sense to me, because I saw a ton of sickness around me, but I also saw sickness in my own family. I was witnessing the demise of my father, who would eventually die at 63. So at the Mayo Clinic, they have no idea what is causing my father's Parkinson's-like illness. They have no idea what the cause is. And here comes this 29-year-old doctor of chiropractic or doctor of cause, and she's telling me, this is what's killing your father. It's the food, it's the lifestyle, it's the environmental toxins, it's lack of being under the care of a holistic provider like a doctor of chiropractic. That's what's killing your father. And again, it made total sense. And she basically said, if you want to avoid going down the same path as your father, you better embrace this lifestyle personally and professionally. And I did. And here I am talking about it.
And this has changed the way you now practice and practice cardiology. And how is that different now as far as your different approach now versus what it was back then?
Well, it's radically different. Obviously, back then, and even how it is for the vast majority of cardiologists, where it's, and the vast majority of medical doctors in general, where someone comes in to see you, or you, again, you see someone in the hospital and you identify what the problem is, and then you come up with some pharmaceutical or surgical or procedural solution to their problem. Well, now, as I practice, again, now we get to the cause of why people have these health issues. So we talk extensively. So if someone comes in with high blood pressure, or they're labeled with high cholesterol, or they've had a heart attack or atrial fibrillation, now we really start getting to the foundation of why they have these issues and work on reversing the cause, work on reversing the why. and people do extraordinarily well. Now, there's always a time and a place for emergency medicine. There's a time and a place for trauma. Believe me, I'm not denigrating those doctors who do that. But the reality is, when it comes to real prevention of sickness, the medical doctors have nothing. They have nothing. There's no, you know, aspirin is not prevention. Statin drugs are not prevention. Blood pressure drugs are prevention. They are an artificial band-aid approach that is ultimately not successful.
So I love that you identified DC as not just doctor of chiropractic, but doctor of cause. As a natural cardiologist, you definitely prescribe to your patients chiropractic care. Why is that, and what benefit have you seen from that?
Well, a lot of people, you know, it's kind of funny, Dr. Tracy, when people come in to see me and then I start talking about chiropractic, or maybe they read chapter 14 of my book called The Wonders of Chiropractic, why all my patients are under chiropractic care, because they think I'm trying to push them to my wife, you know, maybe, And people are enthusiastic to hear that. They don't think it's like a sales maneuver to get people. But again, they're like, oh, you just want, you know, me to see your wife. I'm like, actually, my wife is very busy with our four children. She's not seeing patients right now. Maybe she'll talk to people about you know, children and children's health and children and chiropractic. But me personally, I send people to DCs all over the world, wherever they may be located, when they come in to see me or they see me virtually. But part of my success is predicated on people being under chiropractic care, because I'm not a chiropractor. So people have to see a doctor of chiropractic. And in doing so, under chiropractic care, chiropractic adjustments have been shown to lower blood pressure by up to 17 over 10 or more. I mean, in the studies that were done, people who have high blood pressure understand that top number, again, the systolic number, you know, a reduction of 17 points and 10 points on the diastolic, that's as good or better than any pharmaceutical without the side effects. So with chiropractic care, we can help to normalize blood pressure. We can lower inflammation. Inflammation is the body being on fire. It's linked to all cardiovascular illnesses. Again, inflammation means higher risk of heart attack, stroke, atrial fibrillation, you name it. Mm-hmm. Chiropractic is proven to improve immune function. And by improving immune function, immune dysfunction is all linked to cardiovascular disease, how the immune system really starts to damage the heart if it's not monitored appropriately and balanced. And then ultimately, chiropractic care improves what's called heart rate variability, which is another sign of improved autonomic function, which also benefits the heart patient and every patient. So the bottom line is, everybody should be under chiropractic care. I personally believe that the doctor of chiropractic should be the primary care, kind of gateway into the medical world or into the health space. And then again, if the doctor of chiropractic can identify maybe some areas where maybe medical intervention is needed, or some other maybe, you know, advanced practitioner in that particular arena, well, then the DC can help refer that person out to the person who needs it. That's how I see the future of healthcare. Mm-hmm. That's the only way that I think that we survive as a species. It is not through the pill and procedure model. It is the pill and procedure conventional medical model is a failure, but it is only propped up by money and the pharmaceutical industry in bed with the government. So in short, everybody see your doctor of chiropractic. If you don't have one, get one. I'm sure Dr. Nick and Dr. Tracy can be fantastic resources on how you can see somebody.
That's right. Yeah, thanks for that, Doc. That's why, I mean, you get along so well with the Max Living community and our doctors and our network is not only because you think like us, but, you know, you're also very in tune with, it's not just the eating and exercise and minimizing toxins and supplementation and all that, but also taking into consideration the value of the nervous system and the importance of it. And so I really appreciate your perspective on that. The idea of the doctor of chiropractic being a gateway into the medical model, you know, we've been talking kind of in-house with Dr. Larry Pilevsky, who I think you're familiar with, the natural pediatrician out on the East Coast. And he says something very similar, how, you know, we're no longer interested in changing medicine. It's kind of a sinking ship. You know, the Titanic is sinking. And so, you know, people are jumping off. We're more interested in creating better systems. And this idea of creating better systems and helping people, what I've seen and what we've seen in practice is just there's so much fear behind heart disease. How do you deal with the fear behind heart disease and the family history idea? Do you even address family history at this point? And how do you help that person who is overcome with fear?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of things there. And first, let me say this in general about the people in the Max Living community, the doctors in the Max Living community. They're really doctors who, you know, talk the talk and walk the walk. And certainly you can look at the doctors of Max Living and many other chiropractors as well, and just see them as real role models for health and wellness. I left a cardiology group with 40 other cardiologists and cardiovascular surgeons. And I would probably say that half of them would be, at least half would be considered significantly overweight, and probably a quarter of which were obese. So why would we ever use them as a role model to what we're trying to do and achieve? And I think you have to again, talk the talk and walk the walk in order to really provide information for these patients about the health and wellness. So I think, again, that's where Max Living, you know, really comes in. As far as people come, you know, coming in with heart disease as a family history and the fears surrounding that, you know, listen, there's 300 million, you know, plus a million, you know, million Americans and you know, two thirds of them would be said to have a family history. Does that mean that two thirds of our people have bad genetics as it pertains to heart disease? That's obviously, you know, pretty foolish. And our genetics are amazing and they can allow us to run and jump and feel and love and make new babies. Like, our genetics are fantastic. And it is only the environment that interacts with our genetics, the concept of epigenetics, that leads to health problems. So when people say, I've got a family history of a heart attack, well, again, you know, you lived in the same house, eating the same foods, the same toxins that everybody talks about, whether it's air pollution, it is unnatural products used in the home, maybe it's mold mycotoxins, again, all these other things in the personal environment and in the food and in the lifestyle, poor sleep, lack of sunshine, that all impact on our genetics, and now we lead to disease. And ultimately, I use the example of the movie Castaway with the actor Tom Hanks. And I love that movie because I think it really makes it very simple to understand. And for those of you who haven't seen the movie or haven't seen it in a while, because everybody's pretty much seen that movie Castaway from the year 2000 approximately. And the idea being is that Tom Hanks winds up on the remote island as the sole survivor of a plane crash. And on that island, he wakes, he goes to sleep with the sun down, he awakes with the sunrise, he watches the sunrise, spends the day in and out of the sun, eating coconuts, fish, and avocados in an environment where there's no pollution, no chemicals, no Wi-Fi, no cell phone towers, no nothing. And I believe, aside from the fact that he suffers from loneliness and social isolation, again, is highly correlated with cardiovascular disease risk. And now kind of coming into, hopefully we're in this post-COVID era. And now at this time, hopefully we can get out of this social isolation where everybody is distanced, everybody is home and on lockdown, and people in nursing homes and hospitals dying alone. This social isolation that Tom Hanks suffers from in the movie, if we can avoid that, and live that Tom Hanks lifestyle, again, the right food, the right sun, the right sleep, in the right environment, we live until we're 125, and then we don't wake up one day. No matter what our genetics are, genetics does not play a role on that island. Somebody with the worst family history of cardiovascular disease doesn't die at 40, 50, 60, 70 on that island of heart disease. We are built to live a very long time.
So I feel like the underlying theme of the way that you practice, and definitely the way that we practice, is believing in the innate intelligence in the body, that the body was designed to heal, that it doesn't need any sort of outside forces, but we have everything that we need for health. And I love that. That's the mindset. That's where we have to approach things like heart health. That's how we have to approach whole body health and wellness. Let's talk about some of the external factors, though, that we can control. In your book, you write a lot about diet and different ways to eat that will help support cardiovascular health. Talk to us about some of the first steps that you would say someone can implement in changing their diet to a more paleo way of eating.
Well, the first thing I would tell people to do, and what I do tell people to do, is that instead of debating about what is the best diet, like I know how Tom Hanks eats on the island. I know how our ancestors ate. I read anthropology textbooks and paleontology textbooks, and you can read the literature from the explorers from the 1600s, 1700s, when they came across native peoples, and you can see what they ate. But unfortunately now, for a whole variety of reasons, the issue about what is the best diet seems to be very confusing. Like to ancestral humans, it was very simple. Again, they were hunter-gatherers. But for a moment, let's put that aside. And let's just say that no matter what diet you want to follow, whether it is the whole spectrum, right? You got vegan and vegetarianism, and then maybe you slip into Mediterranean, and then now you get into paleo and keto and ultimately carnivore. So on this side, you're all plants. And on this side, you know, you're all meat, seafood, and eggs. You're all animal products. And whether or not somebody should be lacto, ovo, and all these, I mean, again, there are literally, right, hundreds of different diets that have been published. What I want people to get first is get the chemicals and the poisons out of your food. So therefore, that means just eat organic food that has not been sprayed with pesticides or using synthetic fertilizers. Just make it organic, get the chemicals out. And that is a great, great start. And I think if that's all you did, then your health would be phenomenally better, no matter what else you did with the foods. So again, we know from the cardiology literature that people who are in the highest third of pesticide levels. So when we test people's blood, we can divide those people. Again, you know, take 300 people and the top 100, middle 100, and the bottom 100 of pesticide levels. If you're in the top 100 out of those 300 regarding your levels of pesticides, your risk of having a heart attack and dying of cardiovascular disease is 300% higher. So we want to get the chemicals again out of the food. So if you're listening to this and you're like, you know, Wolfson, Dr. Tracy, Dr. Nick, you know, you guys are talking about these foods. And Jack Wolfson mentioned ice cream. If you're going to eat ice cream, I'm okay with that. I don't think it's the healthiest choice. But if you're going to eat ice cream, make it organic ice cream. Make it organic chocolate. Make it, again, organic wheat bread, whatever your thing is, organic cereals. Just get the chemicals out of the food. And that's the number one place to start.
Wow. You know, there's this idea of things that are cardiotoxic because people will talk about this and say, well, how in the world does toxicity affect the heart? Well, that directly affects the heart. And what I find a lot of people struggle with in this conversation about nutrition is when you start getting into fats, you know, hey, you need to eat more healthy fats. In fact, we talk about how it's one of the missing ingredients in a lot of people's diets, macronutrients, because they're told, you know, fat makes you fat, that fat will cause heart disease and fat will build up plaque in the arteries and cholesterol problems, etc. You know, being a doctor who talks about maybe the paleo diet or more of a natural diet, what we can call that the advanced plan, which is more of a high fat, high protein. We call it food by God, closest to its natural state versus food by man. How do you address that with that person who's worried about fat in their diet and cholesterol?
I mean, obviously, you know, since the 1950s and a man by the name of a doctor by the name of Ansel Keys did research in the 1950s and 60s, And his research, he was at a very high profile institution, University of Minnesota, at the time when he was doing the, you know, the research, and that was kind of tied in with the Mayo Clinic. So he was very well known, Dr. Ansel Keys. And he was a proponent of the low, what's called the low fat hypothesis. He was saying that cardiovascular disease is from high fat, it's from saturated fat, it's from cholesterol consumption. He was one of the first people who promoted that. Now, there were a lot of doctors that were against him at the time, doctors all around the world, very famous doctors, and these stories are told in many different books. Well, Ansel Keys really had the ear of the federal government, and he also certainly had the ear, and he was also likely very much in bed with big food companies, big ag and big food. So when you're essentially in bed with Kellogg's and Nabisco and Quaker Oats, and you're able to sell all those foods that are non-perishable, they can sit on a shelf, you know, for a year, 2 years, 3 years. And again, because they are very carbohydrate rich, it was very well known that those are addictive foods. They knew obviously from animal studies where they're feeding animals these carbohydrate and grain rich foods, the animals got fat. And people, again, the ability for these farmers to raise obese animals and then of course to sell them for extreme profit. And they realized that the American palate really preferred those fattier, well marbled cuts of meat. They enjoyed the taste more. So that's really kind of the foundations from the 50s and 60s about the low fat hypothesis. And again, it just continued to propagate itself when in reality, of course, we are paleo eaters and we eat plenty of fats. And we eat fat from avocado, fat from seafood, free range grass fed meats. We eat fats that are, everybody would agree that nuts and seeds are healthy. And of course, they're full of fat. We can say avocados are healthy. They're full of fat. Ultimately, if you look at the most studied diet in the world, it is the Mediterranean diet. And the Mediterranean diet was researched where basically they're giving people in the study group, they're giving them a gallon cans of olive oil. Like they're sucking down olive oil like anybody else would be, you know, drinking water. So an olive oil, of course, by definition is pure fat. And then ultimately, guys, what I like to say is that, eat the caloric equivalent of either a loaf of bread or a bottle of olive oil. And if you eat the bottle of olive oil, or in that case, drink it, you will wake up the next morning and you will actually weigh less. As opposed to if you eat bread, you can just stick it right to your rear end or wherever you don't want it to stick to. So I'm definitely a proponent like you guys of higher fat consumption. There's plenty of studies and data that shows that fat is not the problem. Carbohydrates are the problem. Of course, simple sugars, processed foods, pretty much everybody agrees on that. But then there'll be a difference again in philosophies when it comes to kind of the, whether we should go more towards lower fat, more towards higher fat. I will say one more thing about that. I do have a friend who's a vegan cardiologist who was a very low fat proponent, but as studies have come out most recently saying that actually higher fat improves vascular reactivity and the way blood vessels function, he's actually shifted his way of thinking, which after, 63 years of him being on the planet Earth and over 40 years as a vegan, it's a major paradigm shift for him. But I think, again, what is common sense is really coming out in the literature as well.
That's so good. Can you explain vascular reactivity for listeners so they could get a better understanding of that?
Yes, I will. If you can describe the innate a little bit better, then I'll do that, right? So you're putting me on the spot for that. So vascular reactivity, essentially we're talking about blood vessels, and blood vessels can either be wide open superhighways and blood is just kind of rushing through, supplying all the different organs of the body, or the blood vessels can be tight and spasmed. And when they're tight and they're spasmed, they block adequate blood flow. So that could lead someone to be short of breath. It could lead to chest pain. Of course, it could lead to a heart attack, and it could lead to a stroke. So we want to have good wide open blood vessels. And that really is predicated on a lot of different factors. Of course, eating healthy, living healthy, and then the chiropractic adjustment as well, because those blood vessels are controlled by the autonomic nervous system. So the part of the brain that supplies the neurologic control of those blood vessels, they're coming in from the outside and they're attached to the blood vessels, and they tell blood vessels to either contract or relax. And I believe there's adequate data, and I've seen it certainly clinically in my patients, that when people are under chiropractic care, those blood vessels are just more open. And that's obviously one of the reasons why chiropractic has been shown to lower blood pressure and improve those other parameters that I discussed.
Good. Thank you.
You know what's amazing about that is that all of that's happening without you and I thinking about it. Like, mm-hmm. even that person who has no idea what vascular reactivity is or the word innate or any of that, it's like their bodies are doing all of that at the right time, every time, without any interference. And the body has been doing that for however long we've been in existence. And it's just like, we might study it with education or educated brain, but the body's been doing that all along without any of us even thinking about it, which is incredible.
And I guess that is the definition of the innate, right? Your body just does what it's supposed to do without us even thinking about it. When, you know, again, when you provide the body what it needs, take away what it doesn't, the body is a fantastic, fantastic piece of machinery that can is more advanced than anything that man has ever created, that's for sure, and ever will create.
Well, there's been lots of good information so far, and this is a three-part episode. So we're gonna pause here, we're gonna come back. But hey, I wanted to invite you to the cardio workshop. This is a workshop that we're hosting all over the country at our Max Living offices. And at this workshop, you're gonna learn how to uncover the common mistakes that people make that does lead to heart disease. You're gonna learn how to debunk the cholesterol myths and the blood pressure myths and the plaquing of the arteries myths to really uncover what truly causes these things. And then you're gonna leave with a five essentials strategy. Remember, we call that the five essentials to optimize your heart health. And this is an event that is coming up soon. So here's what you do to register for this event. If you are already connected to a Max Living clinic, simply reach out to them, find the date, and make sure you get registered, reserve a seat. If you are not currently connected to a Max Living clinic, go to maxliving.com, find a clinic near you, and make sure you get registered for the cardio workshop.